You are listening to the Mother of All Podcasts.
Each week, we will break down a popular topic revolving around parenting and relate it back to our own lives. We're not parenting experts, but we're living out parenting each day and sharing our experiences along the way.
Welcome back to the Mother of All Podcast. This is one of your hosts, Sam.
And I'm Taylor.
And today we are here with two wonderful ladies, Courtney and Kyla. Thank you so much for joining us.
They are consultants, and you're also speech and language therapists. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So we're really excited to hear everything about what you guys do and how you guys got started.
Okay. So we both have master's degrees in speech therapy. That is our official background. Speech therapists are qualified to work on feeding and swallowing issues as well. That's in our scope, but it is a very specialized form. We didn't learn all we needed to know in school. So we didn't start out by doing feeding therapy or working with babies. We were doing more speech and language, and we still do that also. But we both work full-time jobs.
Yeah.
As mostly speech therapy. And then I own a clinic out in Washington, Missouri, where I have speech, PT, OT, reading, academics, behavior.
I think that's the whole list.
I kind of accidentally fell into that. I was working for an outpatient clinic with a hospital and just kind of wanted to spread my wings and try it on my own. And I expected to just be a solo speech therapy clinic, just me. But there's a lot of need where we're at. And most of the other therapists that work for me came to me saying, hey, do you want to add occupational therapy? Do you want to add physical therapy? So then it's grown from there. So I own that company, hired on Courtney as a speech therapist. And she has also in that time become our clinic coordinator. And she does something called myofunctional therapy, which I might let you explain when you talk, because I struggle to explain.
I can do that. Absolutely.
And we both had a passion for adding baby feeding services to the list of our services. So we did lactation counselor training as well. She's got some more extra CEUs in the baby motor patterns side. I did a little bit extra in the lactation. So we bounce off each other so that we can help parents feed babies however they want to feed them, you know. So we see formula fed babies, pumping, combo, breastfed, whatever.
Yeah, I moved out to this area a couple of years ago. And when I moved out here, Washington's like a really, it's kind of like a small town. Everybody knows everybody. So we moved out here. My husband grew up in Washington and was like, you know, you need to reach out to Kyla. And I'm like, who's Kyla? He says, she owns this therapy clinic. I'm sure she'll give you a job. Just send her an email. And so I like dug her on the website and I saw that she was trained in the myofunctional therapy that I'm also trained in. And I was like, ooh, there's my in. So I sent her this message and I was like, hi, I've done training in this. Can I please have a job? And she hires me like literally on the spot because you're the most trusted
person.
You just
fell out of the sky. And I needed someone else with the same training as me because, well, this was the point you lost though. I was pregnant, about to go on maternity leave, and none of my therapists had the same training that I did. So I needed someone to replace me. And then she was like, ooh, caveat, also super pregnant.
Yeah.
Also going to have a baby. Well, you were supposed to have a baby.
I was supposed to have a baby 2 months after your baby was due. So it would have kind of sort of worked out. Yes. And then I had him at 36 weeks.
So she was a wild disappointment out of the gate. Couldn't work the hours she was supposed to work. Was definitely busy having a baby. And that worked out so swimmingly well. So yeah, our kids are a month apart.
Which and
somehow
so fun.
We've been able to.
And that kind of morphed because I had this like beautiful first time mom mindset of feeding's going to go perfect. I know how to do this. And then feeding was miserable. It was like the worst, hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I remember sitting on the couch and I was like, I'm supposed to know how to do this. And if I don't know how to do this, who does?
Yeah.
And so then as we came back, we're like, we've got to figure this out. This can't be okay. And so I took a speech therapy continuing ed in the motor side of how to babies eat, because my baby was gassy, refluxy, leaked half his bottle out of his mouth. It was a mess. And so I was coming from that angle. And I was a formula feeding mom. Kyla's a breastfeeding mom. And so we're like, we've got kind of this perfect matchup. let's figure this out. And then we did lactation, and now that's, you know,
so we created a section of the company that is all babies, and turned the Instagram page into just our names, Kyla and Courtney, because it was previously all of the therapy components. And then that kind of took off. So yeah, that was a long-winded answer.
Here we are.
Hey, I love it. I like to hear it. So regarding your company, do you mainly see or consult with people in Washington, or are you virtual, or how do you guys go about doing that?
We do both. Our in-person practice is local. We get a lot of people that drive in from St. Louis City and surrounding areas, but we do a lot of virtual appointments nationally.
And we now have, we are renting an office out of the Wellness Co. on Watson and Sunset Hills. So we are able to see people in person. It's just one day a week, but if there are moms in the St. Louis area that don't want to make that hike, we have been very impressed with the amount of moms that have been willing to come see us and make a 45-minute drive for whatever. But
it's amazing.
So we will have the location in the city as well. Now
that's awesome.
Yeah. But yes, virtual. We are just kind of amazed at the problems we can solve virtually, because I think the gut instinct there is like, how could you possibly be looking at something so tiny as a baby's mouth and be able to solve all these problems? Yeah. And then just like time and time again, we do these virtual sessions with people in other states, and they meet their goals. So that led us to focus more on virtual, because so much of what we were doing already was texting moms answers to questions. And they send us a video, and then we send them a video, or we do a quick 30-minute Zoom session and can accomplish so much. And since this is such a rare service to have, not just lactation, but we're also feeding therapists, that combination is very rare. And so being able to reach people that don't have anybody local is very cool.
That's awesome. So, okay, as therapists, like for me, I have to have my license in multiple states to be able to work. Do you have to have your license in all of these specific states to be able to, like compact states and stuff, to be able to care for other people?
If we were technically doing strictly speech therapy and it was very much only using that license, we would have to refer them to someone.
Okay.
Got to that point. Lactation counseling is not a licensed profession.
That makes it easier.
You're able to do a lot. Yes. And then a lot of, you know, when it comes to like a big question moms are asking in Facebook groups right now is like, hey, do you think this baby's tongue-tied? And bringing up tongue ties and lip ties and things like that. One of the hardest parts of navigating that is figuring out what provider to start with and what, you know, do I go to a dentist? Do I go to an ENT? Do I go to a chiropractor? Who's the one helping me? So those moms where it's reaching a point where they really do need a feeding therapist in that baby's mouth and feeling how that baby sucks and some of those things we do in person, then we can help them to figure out who's in their area. So we're still a good starting point, even if it gets to a point where we wouldn't be able to do it.
Okay.
Who do you tend to recommend for that, if you don't mind me asking?
The release providers that to me have the most green flags are the ones that are going to want you to see someone like us first. Someone like us, in our opinion, biased, but also I feel factual, is the best place to start, because all the best researchers, all the best advice for tongue tie right now says that you only need to release that tongue tie if you can't meet your goals without releasing it. So you need someone with the mindset of how's feeding going? What else have we tried? We talked to mom, like, is this an oversupply or an undersupply issue? Is this a bottle choice issue? Like the symptoms that mom's having, is it something else? Somebody needs to be checking that before surgery would happen. So a feeding therapist, a feeding specialist, some IBCLCs, lactation consultants have extra tongue tie education as well. And honestly, we can usually tell by like their website if there's someone who would know enough about that topic to be a good resource. So
the other piece of why it's so important to start with people like us who have that extra training and function is when we think about what a tongue tie release is doing, it's only changing the anatomy. It's not changing how those muscles work together. And so then in some cases, if you do that release, nothing will change without retraining those muscles. Kind of like you wouldn't have a knee replacement without going to physical therapy. Mm-hmm. It's the same type of a thought of we have to do some prehab to get those muscles ready And then if we're not meeting our goals, then they do their little, their procedure. We fine tune everything and we see so much better results.
Yeah. Then the baby doesn't need as much work afterwards too, mm-hmm. after they're in a little bit of pain and they have that wound. Their muscles already kind of relearned what to do. Essentially, if a baby cannot move their tongue the way they need to, they're going to figure out another way to eat because they need to eat. So they're going to start incorporating muscles that they weren't supposed to be using. And that's where you get like a painful latch. If a baby can't move its tongue and it starts munching down to try to get that milk out, trying to use the lips, trying to use the gums, very painful for mom, but that's all the baby's ever known. So just because you clip the tongue and the tongue could do it, the baby's already learned the wrong pattern. So we work with mom and the baby to reteach the tongue what to do. Then a pediatric dentist or an ENT would provide that range of motion, and then baby can snap into their new job.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are a lot of places out there that see that there's a tongue tie and immediately go to let's fix it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Snip it and fix it and call it a day, where you guys are
one of our favorite
band-aid on it.
Yeah. We always say like we're whole picture. Like we know if they're breastfeeding, we know what that breast should be doing, and we know what that baby should be doing, and we know what that tongue should be doing, and we can kind of put it all together. And that's why we love the release providers that do want the family to see us first, because from their angle, they're looking at what that tie looks like. But unless it's those rare, occasionally, like when you think, I'm so in this world now, what a normal person thinks of when they think of a tongue tie, but some babies are tied right at the edge of their tongue and they look so obviously tongue tied that you're like, oh my gosh, that tongue can't do anything. But there's other babies where that tissue is inserting farther back, where a layman eye, like a pediatrician who's not used to seeing a lot of tongue ties, or a pediatric dentist, that's not normally what they do, they might not know if it's a tie or not. And for us, what one little slogan we use is surgery prevention and surgery prep are pretty much identical, because the therapy that we do prior to a tongue release is get this baby functioning as well as they can with the range of motion that they can, because it's less invasive. Lasering a tongue tie is not the most invasive surgery in the world. It's usually not a big deal at all, but it's still interrupting, you know, if you can fix it without something, everyone's going to go conservative. I mean, absolutely. You guys know that in your careers as well. You're going to shoot conservatively. So we are pretty conservative just because we see that we're able to meet a lot of the goals halfway through preparing for that surgery, because right. we're maxing out what that baby can do. And right. sometimes it turns out that baby can do plenty
right.
with what they've got. And when they can't, they're totally ready for that surgery. And then the surgery is going to have better outcomes. Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Me too.
So regarding breastfed babies, this just brings me back to like when I breastfed, I used a nipple guard. Mm-hmm. What do you think of those? You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they have their place and are usually a short-term solution. I want to know, why did you need it? And can I fix the thing that made you want to use it? Because mm-hmm. ultimately when you're breastfeeding, like, having to find that clear shield,
this is a pain.
It's such a pain. And who makes them clear? But having to always find that middle in the middle of the night, worrying about keeping it clean, worrying about, you know, all of the different things. And then you already feel like you don't have enough hands when you're breastfeeding. And now we're going to have to hold on a shield. Yeah.
So we try to keep it short term for the moms that do feel like it's a pain. We know moms that don't feel like it's a pain. And then I don't care.
Yeah,
sure. Let's go for it. Yeah. I would say my two issues why you may sometimes like have people say like, oh, I wish we didn't see as many of those. No, if they work. Right. And there's moms that are like, I could not have breastfed without that. There's exceptions for everything. Like we generally say, wait, if your long-term goal is breastfeeding or combination feeding, we say wait to introduce that bottle until about 3 to 4 weeks. I didn't, because I had mastitis and I was freaking miserable and that baby needed to eat.
Right.
So we are very, I think, very good at accepting and meeting moms where they are. We're pretty freshly postpartum ourselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we know that your brain isn't super functioning at that point. And we need to get that baby fed, get you healthy,
Every single time that we meet with a mom, we very explicitly ask, all right, what's your goal today? What's your long-term goal? Your goal is my goal.
Let us know if it changes.
Yeah. So like if you were in our door and you're like, hey, the shield works for me, that's not my problem, then we're like, great, cool. I'm not going to mess
with
that.
I have no investment in, yeah.
I do not need to put that on your mental plate to take it away. But if you're like, I can't handle one more thing, then I'm going to do everything in my power to get you having a relationship that you don't need it.
Yeah.
I hated that thing, but I needed it. Only one breast, which is crazy because when I was little, when I had chicken pox, I guess when I had my chicken pox, it like made my nipple a little weird. TMI. I don't really care if anybody knows because you know all of our nipples are weird. So like, my kids had like the hardest time latching on my left breast. Wow. It was crazy. And so like at one point I stopped fully breastfeeding out of my left breast. My boobs were so abnormally sized.
We have had people ask, like, can we breastfeed on one side? And I'm like, yeah, you probably can. A lot of people have the supply for that. And also, you're going to be lopsided.
I was so lopsided. And my husband, I got out of the shower one day, and he's like, oh, my God.
When I was pregnant, I got out of the shower.
Like, I just...
They get darker.
When I got out, he was just like, what?
I feel like my two things with nursing shields, I wish there was a rule where... if a provider suggested that nurse nipple shield or gave it to you, it also always came with a referral to a feeding specialist.
Totally.
Because it's not most people's ideal long-term solution. So it's a sign that there's something that needs to probably be worked on, you know?
Absolutely. It's a practice that needs to be implemented more often. Just kind of, you guys are kind of breaking barriers into coming into this network of postpartum care with moms, just like pelvic floor physical therapy. That used to not be a thing. These should be things that should be regularly prescribed, which
makes our goal.
Right before we hopped on the call, we were just talking about if only we could break into hospitals, we would probably, I feel like we would get close to putting ourselves out of a job. Because if in those first couple of days, can just get you set on the right track, and make sure you have the right information.
So we offer prenatal packages where we meet you beforehand. And like you're saying, I think society is getting so much better at realizing that there's a fourth trimester and you need to be ready for this. But one thing that we talk about more than other people that we've noticed so far is like feeding is kind of your full-time gig in postpartum. So if you're going to prepare for postpartum, getting not even just the things, we don't honestly do not teach that much in a prenatal consultation. There's research that says if you know, especially if your goal is breastfeeding, if you know too much about breastfeeding, it can actually lower your chances of success.
Interesting.
Like, you don't need to know everything that could go wrong. Like,
we don't need to tell you what to do if you get mastitis just when you haven't had your baby yet.
Yeah. So what we do in the prenatals is very basic and it's very focused on the first couple days. And then in that package is also included tech support access to us. So we don't need to teach you about low supply and get in your head that you're going to have one.
Right.
Like, wait and see what happens. You know, let's prevent that low supply. If you're one of those moms that's going to have a low supply no matter what we do, then we will give you, we'll send you all those handouts and we'll offer to meet with you again or whatever. So we keep the information overload to a minimum and then just give you access to that support as needed. I think most pregnant people for the first time don't realize that feeding is like kind of one of the main things that you do.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I feel like there's also a lot of things that happen like when your milk comes in. Like I got mastitis the week.
I was a week postpartum.
And I remember my husband was going back to work. And I didn't realize that I was sick. Like, I didn't realize that. I just assumed everybody says that breastfeeding sucks.
You had like a 10-3 fever.
Yeah. I was ill. Like, he went back to work. And I remember my daughter was sleeping next to our bed, like in her crib or bassinet or whatever. And I tried to go back to sleep and she woke up and I was like sobbing. I was like, I'm so sorry. Crying to my newborn daughter.
I had that exact moment
in a blanket, like I have a fever, I didn't recognize that I had a fever until I finally got her back to sleep and I laid back down and I'm like shivering blankets and I have like two blankets on top of me. And I was like, why am I still cold under all these blankets? And I was like, oh my God, Do I have a fever
right
now? I think
you and I talked that day. I told you to go to the doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure I called Sam and said, like, I think there's something wrong. And then, like, I called Brandon, my husband, and I was like, I have 102 degree fever. And he was like, what? So then he had to come home because my daughter had, like, her 1 week doctor appointment, you know, how they go to the doctor 85 times in the first month that they're born. And so
you
I
called up that. In your diapers for that appointment.
Yes. And then, you know, it's so funny because then my son, my second child, he was born and literally a week after I knew, like, once I was in it, like, and it's happening again, I was like, I've got mastitis. And I was taking him to the doctor, and I remember, like, sitting in the doctor's office, and the pediatrician walked in. She was like, you don't look like you feel super great. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I've got mastitis. Like, I called my doctor, and I did. It's crazy, you know, but you don't know until you're in it, you know?
And, like, when those things happen, it's like, you have mastitis, you're also bleeding. You also have this thing that needs you every 5 seconds.
Yes.
Like, and that's what we try to always bring ourselves back down to, that moment when we have a mom in the office that's like, we can't teach you 700 things in one session because this is the time. Like, you're in it right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not next to you. It's not logical at all. I had kind of a similar experience. Mine was 3 weeks postpartum, also the day that my husband went back to work. And it was I had an unplanned C-section, and I had no idea what a C-section recovery is supposed to look like. You know exactly where I'm going.
I have a bad time telling Courtney's birth trauma, so I'm just going to not say any of it.
And so I had an unplanned C-section that was not on my type A brain radar. I did not prepare for that. I had no idea what to expect. I still couldn't, like, stand up and walk to the bathroom across my ranch house.
They had to put the baby's bassinet next to her couch because she couldn't walk to go get him at 3 weeks. And she was like, I don't know, I guess
this is normal. And so that day that he went back to work, I had the same thing happen where I spiked a fever, and I was like, I don't feel very good. I was still taking all of my, like, pain meds from the C-section. Also 3 weeks out, nobody told me that that shouldn't be normal. And then later on that night, I developed, like, excruciating pain. That fever spikes even worse, even with Tylenol and ibuprofen, all that stuff. I ended up with a pelvic abscess the size of a Harry Potter book. And my brain was like, what?
They're doing that.
Oh, my gosh. God.
I'm Courtney, and that's my birth trauma.
She's worked through it. She's done a lot of great self-work. Yes.
Yeah,
with her birth trauma.
I have a really great therapist.
Yeah.
And now I like to, like, laugh about it. And it's also my party trick. But I think that...
Can you tell them? No, it's like a little bit more. She labored for 70 hours and pushed for 5 hours. Then she had that C-section. And then
my kid decided to turn and tried to come out cheek first. And that obviously wasn't going to happen.
No.
Oh my God. 70 hours?
70 hours.
Pushed for five.
That was a thing.
Fuck that.
Five.
Oh my God.
So, like, pushing...
And she's also, like, the best candidate for her job now because, like, I don't know. I haven't met anybody that's outdone that. So it's like, you can't be like, I don't know what. No, I know. Yep. I know what it's like trying to attempt to breastfeed.
The empathy thing, I think I've got
is
down.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And she didn't get the kind of care, especially, I mean, feeding or anywise, but
medically I was failed feeding. I was failed.
Yeah.
And there were so many times that if I just had somebody like what we're doing now, my experience would have been so different.
Yeah.
And I think that that's all I want for moms is I want to be the one that you text at 2 a.m. when you're like, hey, this feels a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Is this normal? Like, I want to be the, like, your best, I don't know, one of our packages is called the bestie.
The bestie. Band. I saw that. It was so cute.
Just want to be your baby bestie. Yeah. Like, we want to be
like
your
what go-to. We do for art. Like, when I started doing the baby feeding stuff. And even before that, because I breastfed, my best friend's a doula. I was, like, kind of that person that people texted their breastfeeding questions to anyways. And then I got the training as well. And so I became that, like, hey, so-and-so, people send me a screenshot of their friend that's in the hospital. Yeah. And so we're like, oh, we could make that a job probably because we'd really enjoy doing that professionally.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And a lot of times it's like you said, just like a little bit of support could have changed so much for your mental health.
Yeah.
Like, just the tiniest little things that just, I don't know, something I said recently in a reel was like it, or maybe, I don't know, probably just a story, but all of the people in your care team, if you're birthing in a hospital, they all have their priorities. So your nurses are keeping you healthy and keeping that baby healthy and you're recovering and they're getting everybody fed, but do they have the same radar that we have? Mm-hmm. Even the hospital lactation consultants don't have the exact same radar that we have. And they don't have the time, those poor things. Like, they're seeing mm-hmm. the lactation counselors, consultants most of the time in the hospital have so many patients that they can't give. I mean, we sit there as long as we mm-hmm. need to sit there. You know, you text us as many times as you need to text us. Like, the case history is full. We're getting your entire medical background. We're trying to find what is it that's making this harder than normal. What little tweak can we try to, you know, fix things? So it's just like it's a missing team member, we feel like. When
just like with tongue ties and new babies and anytime there's a problem, we try to kind of be that, like, the nucleus piece that we know all of the resources and understand all of the moving pieces.
And we know when to refer. Yes. I think we're very good at being like, well, that's not our piece. So
we try to be what your postpartum brain can't.
I like that.
I do too.
So what, obviously, you guys have a big difference between, like, oh my gosh, I'm just pulling my shirt, I don't know how to back up. Between, like, hospital lactation consultants and you guys, because they are just strictly lactation consultants. You also have that speech side. So allowing you guys to kind of identify things that they wouldn't specifically, or is there anything else that you would say that kind of differs you?
Yeah. So I think that the way that we kind of describe it, so your average lactation consultant is experienced and knowledgeable in the breastfeeding dyad. We have the extra knowledge of no matter what your feeding method is, we also have the motor knowledge of the mechanics of feeding. So what muscles is that baby supposed to be activating and what sequence to get that milk down in the most physiologically normal way? And so we kind of go beyond the process of how do we make milk and feed to where we are the experts in both pieces of that feeding dynamic, no matter what way we're getting milk in the baby. Which I think helps us because when your goals change and you decide, hey, I want a combo feed, or hey, I want a formula feed from the beginning,
how do I start introducing formula? I want to be done with this. How do I wean? You know, and lactation consultants do work on weaning, but yes, you don't lose that access point. And that's not true for every lactation consultant by any means. And IBCLCs come from different backgrounds. A lot of them have a licensed health profession and mm-hmm. then they become a lactation consultant. So a lot of RNs do it. So they have an aspect that we can't provide, right? You know, they have that RN aspect. So I think there's a role for each, and I don't want it to make it sound like we're better than, or I don't know. It's just like, I feel like everyone has a different role. Yeah. And same with settings too, like an inpatient, just like with anything, your inpatient doctor has this role of like getting you medically stable and recovering and where you need to be. And an outpatient doctor has a different role, kind of just the fact that we're a private practice also allows a different relationship too.
Yeah.
Right. The baby aspect is, you know, so there are inpatient SLPs that work with babies. So if your baby's in a NICU, you will see a speech therapist or an occupational mm-hmm. therapist that will work on their feeding skills. And some of them do additional lactation training mm-hmm. as well. And a lot of them are working with more medically fragile babies than we've gotten a chance to work with yet.
Okay. As private practice, do you guys take some insurances?
So for everything other than baby feeding, so for our speech therapy, our physical therapy, occupational therapy, we have started a separate side business for this.
Okay.
So to bill for lactation services through insurance, you have to be an IBCLC. So we are working, that's the highest gold standard for a lactation professional. We are both working towards that certification, but there's clinical hours involved. You have to have 1,000 hours. So the more moms and babies you can get us to meet, faster we can start accepting insurance.
Yeah, that would be great.
And so even though we are using our speech therapy degrees and license to do that, it's a hard crossover because if a mom comes in thinking it's on baby and at the end of the day, all we did was lactation and we promised that mom that we would bill her insurance. And then ethically at the end of it, we're like, we didn't do speech therapy. I can't tell your insurance company we did. So that is why we made that decision. Mm-hmm. Right now, especially because we're so motivated to meet, you know, we're new. We want our name out there. Our prices are kind of too low. It should be higher. Yeah, I don't know if that's a good marketing point or a bad marketing point, but they are they're a steal.
They are.
So
they are.
We did a consult with an influencer, and she is a finance guru and doing well influencing. And she was like, "Raise them. You need to raise them." I'm like, "I know. We will." But
We really want our hours.
We really like doing it too.
We like Alphabet Soup as speech therapists. Like behind our name, we get a ton of letters, and so we like our Alphabet Soup.
We do want to be IV salesies. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the insurance billing component, once that happens, is actually weirdly straightforward as far as healthcare goes.
Okay. So, nice. Yeah.
Someday.
In the short term.
Hey, everyone. So if you haven't already heard, Taylor and I are affiliates for the Go Guarded company. The way I learned about them is because I am a runner and I love anything that can make me feel comfortable on my run. So Jody Fisher is fabulous. We had an episode with her previously. She talks about the company and all the wonderful products that she has for anybody who's a runner, likes to be active, hiking, walking across campuses, walking to your car, any way to keep females and males safe in any instance. So go ahead and go to our show notes, click the link. Use the code MOTHER in all caps. So that's mother in all caps for 10% off. And you will love this. I promise. I promise. You'll love it.
All right. So I do have a question. Taylor and I were talking earlier regarding like any tools that you guys have recommended or like
some tricks of the trade.
Tricks of the trade that you guys would recommend to moms regarding breastfeeding or if there's any like I saw that you guys have a little pamphlet on pacifiers you recommended, which obviously we love Ninico, and I saw that the Ninico is on there.
Yeah, as far as like pacifiers go, Ninny is kind of our go-to. Yeah. We are pretty obsessed with it. It's so innovative. We're also
very different than anything else. And it's also the only thing on the market that I don't get angry when they say it's breast-like. That's like a triggered term for us. And we'll talk about that when we talk about bottles, but bottles that are breast-like, we actually hate. Yeah. The Ninny is the closest thing you're going to get to breast-like and the closest to what we, like we said, we know what a baby's mouth should be doing at a latch. We actually can use the Ninny as an assessment tool sometimes. Cause you can see inside of it.
It's so neat.
Also babies, sometimes if a baby struggles to take a Ninny and won't keep it in or can't keep it in, I should say, sometimes that's a red flag in my head that maybe there's some oral motor issues we need to work on because you've got to have a good latch for the Ninny.
It is interesting. Well, and the way that it's created is that you have to have that negative pressure in order to be able to keep it in because it's removed, is what they say.
Every qualm that people have with pacifiers from all the different aspects, like dental, feeding, they have solved all of them.
Yeah.
And so it is the ideal.
Yeah. And so like what you're saying with the negative pressure, I said earlier, a baby will figure out a way to eat for the most part. They're going to try really hard. So like we hate the term like, oh, they're a lazy baby. They're not, you know, they want to eat. That's their whole job. And so a baby, you know, when you get a mom with like busted up nipples, a lot of times it's because that baby is chomping to get that milk out and they don't have that negative pressure. Just like you're saying, they don't have that vacuum. So that baby would not do well with a Ninny and that would trigger me to be like, maybe you're not getting that vacuum seal that you need to have at the breast.
And we think about all of these things isolated to infancy and we're like, well, this is a 1-year problem or a 2-year problem, but it's not. All of these functions that we are expecting babies to be able to do, like being able to cup that tongue and have that negative oral pressure for feeding, set them up for developmental success for their entire life. Like your whole head forms around your tongue. And so if your tongue's not doing the right thing, you're going to end up with a different face shape than you would have otherwise.
And we talked, so oral myofunctional therapy is a subset of speech therapy that we also have that training in. So we are meeting children and adults. And like you meet some that you're like, you probably had some trouble feeding. Like, you know, we can see those red flags.
I would never guess that.
We're pretty good at guessing that. Yeah. That's like our occupational therapist said that. So I had a child that butt scooted instead of crawled, and occupational and physical therapists really want them to crawl. It's very important to them. And she said she meets kids and based on their handwriting, she'll be like, I bet they never crawled.
Mm-hmm. It's all in the core and the crossing midline. You know,
my cousin's a PTA and talks about that stuff all the time.
So it's just a different, and that's another thing I think we bring to the table in the lactation world is we have a therapist mindset. So we are used to writing short-term goals and long-term goals, and they have percentages and they have level of assistance. And our brain is so wired that way that I can't turn it off with my own kids. No. I mean, I speech therapy my children constantly because you can't stop trying to solve these problems in a therapeutic way.
Right.
So we can take that skill and apply it to teaching mom new techniques and teaching baby new exercises and with new positioning to change their behaviors. Cause we're already doing that with our older clients as well.
Interesting.
That is so cool.
I know.
So what are some other tools other than the Ninico? What are some other tools that you guys have come across that are very helpful?
Yeah.
We can rant about bottle shape. That would be a good start. Probably.
Bottles are next. Like we are very, disappointed in the marketing that happens to new moms because we get so protective of our moms and we're like, your brain isn't working right. We hate when people prey on new moms. And I really,
and
really,
they do.
It's such an easy population. Yeah. And it is done well. Bottles, it is especially like when you go to register for your baby registry and you buy that box of 7 or 8 or 9 different types of bottles and you're like, I don't know what my baby's going to like. I hate that because people will market their bottles to be most breast-like, but that's not what
we
need.
Or problem solving. And yes. Most of the time, if we get a baby that's doing poorly at a bottle or is refusing a bottle, there's an underlying problem on baby's end because, and they, you know, we say that with babies that struggle to go back and forth from breast to bottle or babies that struggle to handle mom's fast letdown or her fast milk flow. Most babies with good oral motor skills can be pretty flexible.
Yes.
So if you're having to try 7 bottles to meet your goal,
something isn't there. Right.
And that's something we struggle with. I think that culturally, and I am exactly the same way. I did not reach out for feeding support when I had trouble. I am my worst target market because I will buy a product in the middle of the night that I think that's going to solve all my problems. But I have too much social anxiety to just schedule an appointment. You know, like the human factor of the things I purchased on Amazon, like the multiple bottles, the multiple pacifiers that you're trying, or this different swaddle is going to change your life, or this, you know, all of those things. We're pretty minimalist when it comes to products. And we think that education and support and problem solving can do a lot more than products.
One thing I really enjoy, if I've got a baby in front of me, especially the babies that are exclusively bottle fed, and mom is like, they won't take a bottle. I just can't do this. I'm notoriously good at solving bottle refusal. It's kind of my thing. And so finding the match. I think that a lot of bottles have a place and there's a baby that it works well for, but it shouldn't be the parent's job to figure it out. I don't want them to go to Target and buy every bottle on the shelf. I want them to spend a little bit of money to come see me. I'm going to assess what skills they have and where we need to go and say, this is the bottle that's going to work for you.
So we have a baseline recommendation that applies to registries and applies to most babies. And that is to avoid bottles that look like breasts. We talk about a lot of, when you talk about lactation and breastfeeding, you talk about getting a deep latch. So a deep latch can solve bringing in too much air when they're eating. It makes mom more comfortable. It makes eating faster and more efficient, and they can remove milk better. All of that applies to bottles too. So if you think of a bottle like the Dr. Brown's narrow, they're like the long skinny and they slope gradually versus looking like a boob with like a nipple sticking out at the end. Baby can get that farther in their mouth and actually mimic closer to what they're doing at the breast than you can if it's like this short, stubby little nipple, like more like, and again, one thing I tell people all the time, if you have a bottle and it is working for you, I am not telling you that you're messing up your child.
Is it like the Avent bottles?
I don't love those.
Yeah.
My kids hated those.
And some kids love them. And it's like, I'm not telling you, I've had people message me like, oh, do I need to switch?
No.
This is talking to the moms that are having a problem. Mm-hmm. Is your baby taking forever to eat? Are they leaking milk? Are they spitting up? If you're trying to solve something, my first thing I'm going to try is to pick a bottle that we like more, which is going to have a long, narrow, gradual slope. So we like the Dr. Brown's. There's an even flow, and the Lancinot ones that come with the pump also are a longer gradual slope that baby can get farther in their mouth and cup their tongue around. Yeah. That being said, babies that don't have good oral motor skills that need to get fed still, a lot of times I'm recommending the bottle that I hate the most, which is the MAM bottle. That's like flat.
That one.
It looks like the old school pacifiers. Like
they're very flat.
It's flat and square. And pinched up. It's wild.
The reason we don't love it is because it doesn't support good oral motor skills. And Courtney was talking about how what you're doing with your tongue at this age is setting you up for orthodontics later and dental health later and the face shape. All of that starts in infancy, and the MAM and those skinnier, flatter, a Nook also, the flatter nipples, they don't set you up for success with that. But we have babies that don't have the oral motor skills. So when mom is giving them a good bottle, like we would say, and they're not feeding, I'm like, let's try this MAM because you don't have to have good oral motor skills. You can chomp at it and you can get that milk out anyway.
And so again, we're
everything
the,
has a place.
Exactly. Everything has a place. And we're the professional that's kind of helping moms way that is this the time that we need to build the oral motor skills and get them set up on the best steps for success? Or is this the time where you just need to get them fed and then yeah. your brain is doing better? We'll revisit and get back on track later.
Timing is everything, especially yeah. tongue ties and revisions. Timing is everything. You know, it's not necessarily earliest intervention is best. It's you have seen a feeding therapist, you've got this baby's skills maximized, the baby is healthy, you're mentally stable enough to be doing the follow-up care, and everybody kind of feels like this is the time. So yeah. we can kind of, like you said, be the nucleus of that team figuring out when's the best timing for that. And that also applies mm-hmm. to, you know, we can be the ones that help you pick that bottle. And if you're struggling with something like that, like nothing's working, I've had to try 7, that's, you know, a red flag that we could be helpful.
Yeah.
So anyways, blanket, what we tell people to register for is either the Dr. Brown's Narrow or the Even Flow or the Lancinot. And we also recommend starting with the slowest flow. Mm-hmm. Another insider trick is there's no standardization or regulation as far as like what they call the nipples. So some of them say like 0 to 3 months, 3 to 6 months, that is all made up. You do not have to, like they've done studies where they're like this flow rate versus this flow rate. Some bottles that claim to be slow flow are faster than that claim to be fast flow. Mm-hmm. So start low.
More reason why we like the Dr. Brown's, they have a really consistent flow. The flow of their 0 and 1 nipples is very manageable for most babies. But yeah, even like a 0 nipple on one bottle to a 0 nipple on the other can be wildly different.
No one's regulating that.
I think I saw a video of something like this on TikTok or something of someone showing the different like flow from different bottle nipples.
So I made one
from the same like size
down off Instagram this week and I can't figure out why it just disappeared. So I don't know if I put hashtag Infamil, which is the nipple I was talking crap on. So I don't know if they saw it and got it taken down, but it disappeared.
Hers, the one that she made was talking about, you know, like in the hospital, if you are like, hey, I want to feed my baby formula, and they bring you those little sample bottles with the yellow nipple, the really natural rubber looking color.
Terrible.
Between 3 of the exact same nipple, the same flow rate, the same bottle nipple had different flow rates.
Wildly different flow rates.
One would drip, one would spray.
One I barely touched and it started shooting out. And
And we're going to give that to an 8-hour-old infant?
Yeah. And so my post was about, so I had a post go like weirdly viral this week and I'm getting that first feeling of like, I need to get off the internet. People have been very mean to me this week. And the commenters, it's all about basically, can you overfeed a newborn baby or not? Will that baby know when to tell you to stop? And so feeding your baby the appropriate amount is incredibly useful when preventing problems like mm-hmm. spit up or belly discomfort or, you know, difficulty going back to breast. So one thing you can try to do is case feed, which is a term we use a lot, and you can Google
it. I had never heard of it. And my niece is like 6 months old. My brother and sister-in-law taught me about it because I was feeding her, and my brother started yelling at me. He's like, "You're not pace feeding her." Like, what the fuck is that?
Everyone knows about pace feeding. Everyone's doctor teaches them about pace feeding. I'm like, that. I did a poll on my Instagram, and it was like 90% of people said they didn't know.
I think it's all about your circle. Like, there are circles that know about it. Yeah, if you're not in that side of the internet, you have no idea.
I was clueless.
Low nipple, you can accidentally overfeed your baby very easily. And there was a study that said that 93% of formula-fed babies were overfed in the first day. And this gets out of our realm, but it's interesting, and I just think it's fascinating, and I want to share it. The study found that if your baby was overfed most of those first feeds in the first day, they're, depending on how often, 4 to 7 times more likely to be obese at their fourth year well check.
Really interesting.
Isn't that interesting? And it's like, that's not the part that's not the part we're working on. We're working on talking about how if baby is fed that much so quickly and then you're trying to get back to the breast, it's going to be really hard to keep up.
So regarding those hospital nipples, would you actually recommend moms who are like planning on not breastfeeding or potentially may not be breastfeeding just to bring one of their new bottles that they got to the hospital?
Bring the bottle. So yeah,
fun hack.
Minimal work on that end. If you just bring, did we say you can pop the nipple in?
You have to use the whole cap. So if you buy the Dr. Brown's narrow nipples, they have wide and narrow. The cap for those bottles fits on those formula bottles. Ooh, in the hospital.
Okay. So
bring the collar and the nipple.
And bring a preemie nipple and the collar. You can pop it on and then throw those in a Ziploc bag and bring them home to wash them. And that way you're not washing bottle parts in the hospital. You still get the ease of using their products, but your own nipple.
As someone who did give a bottle in the hospital, most hospitals will in fact give you a really nice bottle brush. The one that I got wanted you to do it. Oh, I made my husband do it. Yeah. And like the little basin, and they'll give you baby dish soap. And I got the nicest Dr. Brown's bottle brush. And I was like, this is nicer than the one I have at home.
Are really nice. When my daughter was in the NICU, I had like the whole works. They gave me like multiple bottle brushes, everything. I came home with like 4 tubs and I would swap them out and use them all for my cleaning. And it was insane. Yeah.
NICU moms are just a different breed. And a lot of times they know a lot more about feeding than your full-term moms, because they're spending more time with the nurses, and they're those were the ones we knew about feeding.
I was not educated well with my daughter being in the NICU, and it sucked because they had her, like, I didn't even really get to see her right away. So immediately they separated us and put her in the NICU. And then I had to, every time I'd sleep for 1 hour and 45 minutes, walk my butt all the way to the NICU, try and breastfeed. No one taught me. She was not eating. She was hypoglycemic most of her stay. If the third day in, they finally said, "Oh, well, do you want to try formula?" And I was like, "Why didn't you talk to me about this now?" Like, they're like, "Oh, we thought you only wanted to breastfeed." And I was like, "I never said I said exclusively wanted to breastfeed." Like,
well, even I'd love to have options. Like, hey, breastfeed, figure it out. Is not
right. That's not helpful.
Say that they want to exclusively breastfeed, but if no one's telling you what to do when it's going wrong, then that's not support.
And our society just doesn't help moms figure it out, because there are other cultures where it is so normal to get to watch your mom, your sisters, all of your aunties breastfeed, and you have people that you can talk about, but our
and culture, you see them struggle, which I think is important, because yes, it's natural, but it's not intuitive. Yes, it is manageable. It's attainable, but it's not easy.
And our culture has such a secretive, women have to figure it out. We have to, you should know what to do, or you're a bad mom.
You have to breastfeed or you're a bad mom. But then as soon as it goes bad, it's like, just give them formula. And you're like, okay, but I'm just asking for help at this thing you told me I had to do. Like,
And I hate when moms feel like it's their fault when it doesn't go the way that they wanted it to.
We hear those black and white statements a lot. That's like, "Oh, I didn't make enough milk," or, "Oh, baby didn't latch." And you don't want to say anything in the moment, because that mom doesn't need, you don't need to work on that trauma right now. Like, just okay. Yeah. But at the same time, I want to be like, They all let you down. Yes, I mean,
it's not you. It's
are there babies that don't latch? Sure. Are there babies and moms that don't make enough milk? Sure. Are those numbers a lot smaller than,
yeah,
you know, and it's like, we don't care how you feed your baby. We care that you meet your goals. And we, and you know, there is such value in you having a good postpartum. And there's, yes, if you look at happiness scores or depression scores, as far as postpartum, getting to feed the way you wanted to feed matters. Mm-hmm. So, and that goes the other direction. If you want a formula feed from the beginning and you're getting shamed for it by nurses in the hospital,
absolutely,
that is affecting your postpartum health. Oh, like, yeah. So just people being like, what do you want to do and how can I make that happen?
Yes, fed is best. Fed is best.
And so my issue with that term is, really? I think, I don't know. I want to make a reel about it. So
no, I want to hear. I want to hear.
Yeah, we'll see, test it on your audience. Okay. I did make a reel that said, because I was like, I want to talk about this in a way that, like, you have to listen long enough to, you know, you're forced to listen to me right now. So I'll go on my whole rant. I feel like that excludes moms on both ends, mm-hmm, because, okay, sometimes it is used to be like, why are you trying to breastfeed so hard? Like, you're being selfish. This isn't about you. You need to get that baby fed. Yeah. We hear it from that end. And we hear it from the other end where it's like, oh, fed is best. And it's like, well, no shit. Like, everyone's, yeah, feeding the baby. No one's saying that no one, you know, like, your, yeah, your kids are going to turn out great either way. So we, I made a reel that said, I don't actually care if breastfeeding has benefits, is how I worded it. Because if breastfeeding had no benefits at all, it, yes, we know there are scientific things that formula hasn't caught up to on breastfeeding. I don't care. Like, it could be exactly the same. And I would advocate for a mom's right to do it because it's what she wants to do. And it's basic healthcare. And it's, yeah, like, I don't know. So I feel like fed is best is sometimes used by, like, pediatricians or OBs, yeah, as like an excuse for one way or the other.
Right? I've never thought of it that way.
Instead of referrals. Am and I it explaining also, it right? I don't
I think so. And I think it also just dismisses the idea of it doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There is so much middle ground.
Mm-hmm. And we don't, and combo feeding doesn't get talked enough about. And combo feeding is such an awesome scenario for either the mom that's like scared to breastfeed. Like, I don't even want to try it because, like, I've heard all these horror stories. And the other direction as well. Like, yeah, it's excluding moms that, I don't know. All right.
I think, yes, I think ultimately it just comes down to is nobody's arguing that we need to feed our kids.
Yeah.
We all are going to feed our baby. And at the end of the day, we're all going to do whatever it takes to get that baby to keep gaining weight. I think that it just takes off the mental load piece of, yeah, you have to feed your baby, but how do you want to do it? What are, yeah, you going
to say this? What are, yes. Cause if combo feeding was talked about more, then support would be provided and the best way to do that. Cause there's certain tricks that you have to use if you want to sustain formula bottles at, you know, like if you don't want to pump at work and you want to do formula with her at daycare and you want to breastfeed with her with them, there's certain things that we could help you with to make sure that you can maintain a supply to be able to do that. And if it was more of a cultural norm, mm-hmm, you know, cause like they'll say some women can't breastfeed is also thrown out with fed at best. Like, well, some women just can't breastfeed. There are some women that can't make enough milk to sustain a baby's growth. However, there are those moms that were so set on doing it and they're so broken when someone says that, that it's like, what if we said, we'll help you breastfeed to some degree. Like, yeah, if you want to do it a little bit and we'll figure out how to supplement. And
exactly.
Yeah. So, okay. There's techniques. So I obviously I did not see someone regarding my breastfeeding and bottle feeding journey, but I didn't realize there's specific techniques that you can teach someone to do combo because, yeah, I, as a provider, it is very hard to just, like, I know it's as a teacher, it's hard to not breastfeed, but pump at work.
Yeah.
You don't have the time.
There's no
fucking time.
Yeah. Whole so, relationship yeah, with a machine.
Yeah. So
you are literally a lactation counselor.
I sucked
and you had the worst so time pumping.
Bad. And so my second one was a bottle refusal for the most part. Like, my mom could get her to take the man bottles that I hate. She's like, yeah, a whole different episode because I got her tie revised, but like, I was not in the right mental space. I didn't do all, yeah, the things I was supposed to be doing. Huge hypocrite. Again, I hope that builds my empathy, hopefully.
Yeah. Can you tell that our personal experience is like what
they drove this? And they're so different too. Yes. And just like our parenting and personalities are, you know, so we also offer, introduction to solids and helping with baby transfer.
Ooh.
We do. And we talk about how very different we are. Yeah. She's very type A and, yeah, I'm very like, I don't know, hand them that. They can probably eat it. And both are they're totally fine. So like we can read a mom's personality and be like, you got this. Like that mom
this
needs
one's yours.
She needs structure. She needs to know about baby led weaning and how does that work with purees. And I'm just probably like, I don't know. They're fine.
You're like, here's what you do if they choke.
They probably won't choke. You're probably fine. I don't
know. You're right. That was my type A.
Yeah. No, I don't know. So we have all experiences and apply that. Anyway, so my daughter very rarely took a bottle, my second one. But my pumping experience was so different between the two. So my first one, I was addicted to pumping out of the gate. I didn't have any lactation consultant education with my first one. I feel like the internet makes you feel like you were supposed to have a freezer stash. If you're breastfeeding, you're supposed to have thousands of ounces.
Yes.
And I got real stuck on that. You don't need that, by the way. That's insanity. I mean, you can if you want to. You can, I mean, because you can be like, you guys have the episode about milk donation. Like that is, if it works for you, that is the end statement to everything. If something works for you, do it. It did not work for me to have a massive oversupply with my first. I was just literally like water gun shooting milk into her every single time she ate. And she had spit up and belly trouble and gas problems and blowout diapers all day long. And all of these things that like there wasn't someone like me to try to be like, hey, if you lowered your supply a little bit and here's how to lower your supply, you could probably fix a lot of your issues. Cause when you bring up things like spit up to your pediatrician, they're like, yep, baby spit up. And it's like, yeah, they do, but we could probably make it
gaining weight.
All they care about is weight gain and a pediatrician appointment. That's all that matters, which I get, that is their lens. And we just have a different one anyway. So I thought that it was totally normal and necessary for me to pump 2 to 3 times a day, even when I was with her nursing all day. So I was nursing all day. I was also pumping 2 to 3. I was engorged all the time. I had mastitis all the time. Like I was like hot and leaking for like 4 or 5 months. Yeah. And I was, I don't know, like you said, breastfeeding sucks. I don't know. This is what it's supposed to be like this. And this is probably, I'm just having this enlightened moment. I was employed at that time with pump breaks. So I would sit and pump like, babe, I don't know. I had my own office. Like, sure. Don't bother me.
At that job I would that love made you leave to do this.
Cause I was miserable. And so I wanted a break from my job to pump. And it was one where it was accommodated and it was okay. But then when I owned my own business with my second one, it wasn't a priority. I had other stuff I needed to be doing. She wasn't going to drink most of it anyways. But I would get mastitis from not pumping. I was a horrible, horrible hypocrite. But that's why we have a reel about how much we love the Lansdowne hand pump. That's another hack.
I used my hand pump and I loved it.
Absolutely. That's all I used for the.
Really? Oh, my hand pump thing. So there's no way I could have just sat there and hand pumped. It was like in emergencies when I'd be gone somewhere. But yeah, I liked it.
And that's one we recommend having before baby's here, because like that night that you said 1 week out, you got mastitis, 1 week out, I got mastitis. And I was like, I'm not putting that baby on this breast. It hurts too bad. I'm in too much
pain. Yes.
It was. And it's like, yeah, I'm sitting here being like, I know all of these things that I'm not feeding that baby. So I was crying in the middle of the night and I had my hand pump. So I just took out a couple ounces and gave her a bottle. I felt I was so engorged that she couldn't latch because I was so hot and tight and big and her oral motor skills were trash. And like that combination was bad. So yeah, not having to get on an electric pump in the middle of the night could very well have saved that breastfeeding relationship. And we see that pump save relationships quite often. Because I don't know. Some people don't have negative feelings towards their pump, but like sitting down and getting all those pieces out and washing all those pieces is very triggering to me.
Yeah.
It's too much. They need to think of another.
And those wearable ones, like they're good to have as an alternative, but for most moms, you can't just have like an LV or a Willow because they don't get enough milk out. And then your body learns to make less because the pump didn't take it all out. Not everyone. Some moms do fine, but if you have a sensitive supply at all, we recommend also having like a Spectra or a real deal with it.
Okay.
That makes sense. What they should do is like have a pump that's like connected to your phone that'll just like project pictures of your baby.
That's kind of cool. That would be really neat.
If somebody from the pumping network is listening, they should know.
Combo feeding was nice. I enjoyed breastfeeding at home, but I pumped during the day. And then I finally just stopped pumping because I was like, there's no freaking way.
And why isn't that taught? And it's like, I feel like moms, when they get sick of pumping, they feel like, well, society has divided everyone into breastfeeding or formula. So I'm sick of pumping. So I have to be done. I have to, and it's like, if you want to be done, but you don't have to do much.
Right.
But there are very few things in this world that you, in the feeding world that you have to do. And moms are very often not presented with options, you know.
Yeah.
To do it exactly. Most moms have the flexibility and a healthy enough baby and a healthy enough mom to find some kind of version of something that works for them.
Yeah. Well, I know you and I, our mental health both was not doing well while pumping.
No.
Like both of us struggled.
Well, I think the majority of mine was because I felt like I needed to keep up with my daughter who was eating more than whatever I was producing.
Yeah.
And then like anytime that I wasn't able to keep up with her, I felt like a failure almost.
Repeated failure.
Yeah, because I wasn't able to keep up with her. And my husband, meanwhile, is like, there's no prize at the end of this. Like, you just, like, if you, it's okay that you're not producing the amount that you need to produce. If you need to be done, just, it's okay if you stop.
It's okay to be done. It's okay to supplement. It's okay. You know, it's just, I don't know. So that's, I feel like said is best is too black and white is why I think it gets triggered in my head. Because people use it as like, whatever, you don't need to breastfeed, you're not better than me. And I'm like, I didn't say that. Like, I
think it just ends the conversation sometimes too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's so much more conversation to be had. If we're in a point where that feels like the thing that we should say, there's probably more to be said.
People go on a lot of our posts, things that legitimately have nothing to do with an argument. So one decision we made on our Instagram page is to not talk about the benefits of breastfeeding. I don't feel like that's our role. There's enough accounts. If you want to Google it, you'll figure it out. Yeah. As a society, we get it. Like, got it. But until, so it's kind of like how, I don't know if you guys know, but like the Academy of Pediatrics increased the recommendation for breastfeeding to 2 years. Instead of 1 year. And it's like, that is,
that sounds crazy.
And then it's not.
Because crazy. For me, like, in my personal opinion, no.
Yeah. So, but it's like, that is so America to, hey, you need to do this thing. And then nothing support or legislation wise followed that. Yeah. So like, it feels very like, oh, yep. Of course they told us another thing we had to do.
So now, you know, in America, it is hard to be a mom. It's hard to be a
working mom. You go back to work faster than everywhere else.
And we already feel like we're not doing a good enough job at all of the things we're already supposed to be doing. And now I'm supposed to do it twice as long.
Yeah. They didn't say how they were going to do that. They didn't say how they were just like, hey,
you should
figure that out. And if you're not doing it till two, now you're a failure. And it's like before we felt like if you made it to one, that's what they say you're supposed to do. I don't know. So people will comment on our stuff being like, are you trying to say this is better than this? And it's like, no, we have made it our goal, our mission to not put that on moms, because until support backs that up, like, don't, I don't know. Like, you don't need to be talking about it. I don't need to be telling you one is better than the other, unless you are going to have providers at your whim, whenever you want them, making something that's really hard more possible.
Right.
Regarding formula. So obviously we are way past that stage for our children, formula breastfeeding. There's some newer formulas that are supposed to be like almost as close to breast milk.
Yeah.
As I don't know. Are you guys familiar with those or no?
So in all honesty, I want to know a lot more than I do. I know enough to be dangerous. And my knowledge that I have right now, and I may listen back to this in 2 years and be just disgusted with what I'm about to say. I really feel like it is a similar marketing ploy to what's happening with bottles. They find one aspect of breast milk that they can get a little bit closer to. And then they say, oh, we're doing this better than everybody else. And I just don't think that we understand the nuances well enough to say that. And I think that that's.
But they can say that and then charge double.
Exactly. Exactly. And we were talking about that the same way with when the formula shortage was at its peak. And then all of a sudden we had access to all of these European formulas. And we have the mentality that, oh, it's from Europe, it must be better. And I don't know.
We don't know enough to know
we
that
can't
for sure either way.
Trust.
Well, and there's different, there's actually different regulations by state. So in California, you can't buy some of the formulas you can buy in Missouri.
Really? Terrifying.
Like,
there's just, and I don't think that when we're relying on somebody with a marketing degree to tell us
that's scary
which one is best, and I'm not seeing the research behind it. I'm not seeing the, you know, really good comparisons between everything or the whole picture.
Yeah.
I think it's too simple.
And the fed is best versus breast is best argument has a history with that. So lactation associations fight formula marketing and their cats and dogs, and they have gotten, so there's more rules for formula companies than there used to be. So listen to this, as far as marketing, there used to be, it was a standard before HIPAA that formula reps would stand at the nurse's station in the hospital and get your name and when baby was born. And then they would show up at your house at 3 days postpartum, because that's when you're most likely to be struggling with breastfeeding, and be like, hey, just do this. Like,
literally like a girl.
Yeah. Right. So though they have been cracked down on, but yeah, I mean, we're just so skeptical of anything.
And that's why they send you those free little canisters.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Having things on hand. Well, so there's
we love a free sample.
And we like them because people give it to us when they don't use them, and then we can give them back to mom. So
yes,
we do.
Exactly. We love a free sample, but I don't want it slipped in the hands in place of support.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing.
Product. I love that answer.
Yeah.
So much.
I feel like we could talk to you guys for hours.
Yeah.
Well, I think we might have to have you guys on again another time to talk about something that more specific.
So I just whispered that to Taylor to make sure she was good.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
No, and you can pick a topic too. If it's like there's a certain issue that comes up, you know, like the way the formula shortage happens.
We can absolutely talk.
Yes. No, I think we would love to have you guys on again to talk about something like a more specific topic. Mm-hmm. But I really appreciate you guys coming on tonight.
I very much have loved this.
Yes.
So much.
Okay. I'm going to have anxiety that I talked more than everyone else.
No, this is fantastic. So my last question before we end, I always ask this before we end all of our episodes, but if you could reach any mom or any parent that's out there struggling with feeding their children, what would you tell them?
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
My life goal is to just like, just the normalization of, you aren't supposed to do this on your own. Mm-hmm. There was supposed to be a village. Like, if I could get it more normalized for you to be like, oh, this is something that someone else knows more about, I'm just going to, and bring them in. You weren't supposed to be miserable. Yeah. You weren't supposed to do it all on your own.
I think my brain was going in the exact same direction and I didn't know how to word it, but I think that that's right. I think that it's, let's just talk it out. You probably know in there your solution.
Your intuition's amazing. Like, let's talk about, tap into what you probably, you know, you were on that. I don't know. So like, we never disvalue a mother's gut or a mother's intuition. It's probably spot on, but also like that mother is brilliant in some other area. And like, there's a reason they're specialists. Like, you weren't supposed to just know how to do this before that baby got there. That makes no sense.
That's the
like,
way. That's what I want to tell them.
Yeah. You've never done this before. And the baby has never done it before. Yeah. So that's why we say nipple pain is not normal, but it's common. Baby is learning how to eat and you're learning how to feed. And if you're trying to breastfeed, nipple pain is very common because neither of you have any idea what you're doing. And that's normal.
Yeah.
So, right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those were good answers. That was a good answer. All around.
I know, I'm taking it all in.
Yeah, we've really
enjoyed. The thing I'm going to have anxiety about is, oh, I should have said that. Well,
you know what?
Just save it for the next
time. Write it down. And if it's something that you really want to talk about, if you guys are in clinic and you're like, this would be something great to talk about.
Send us an email.
Love that.
We want to know. We want to know, because our goal in this podcast is to provide moms and parents with as much information that we can. That's why we have people on, because we do not know everything.
Yeah, that's right.
And I feel like I don't know. And then moms, we do know so much. Like, I feel like it'd be hard to do our jobs if we weren't moms, because the aspect that you guys are bringing of like being in it.
Being moms too. Yeah. It gives you like the street cred. I don't know.
Yeah.
a mom talking to a mom means a lot more.
Yes.
Yeah. Gosh. Well, thanks again, guys, for coming on and talking with us. Tonight. We really appreciate you.
Yeah. Have a good night.
Thank you too.
For all of our listeners, thank you for joining us and happy Sunday.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Mother of All Podcasts. Our podcast is recorded and edited by Sam and Taylor using Spotify for Podcasters. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe to our show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you really liked us, you can find us online for more information at www.motherofallpodcast.com or on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And we will see you next week.